taking this. Before we get back to the published agenda, I just want to plant a seed in the public mind about this meeting. One of the things I'm doing at this meeting is looking at ways of improving the quality of engagement between the community and the board, and this is one of the major ones. I want you to think about, if you wouldn't mind, for the San Francisco meeting, ways that we might improve this as we do it. This is one of the important sessions for the board. We're about to start preparing after this for our board meeting tomorrow, and we need to take into account what we hear. The other thing we're thinking of is the overall structure of the week, and it puts us under an extraordinary amount of pressure, and it puts staff under even more pressure to go through this process of discussions and meetings with the expectation of passing resolutions at a board meeting on Friday morning or Friday lunchtime. And given the importance of these issues and the importance of taking time to digest public comment and hearing you and having questions that need answers, we are wondering as to whether the format that we've used all these years is still appropriate for what we are trying to do. So I wonder if you could think about that as we move forward. Is there a better way of running the ICANN meetings? Would it be better, for example, if we came here, had the debates, and then had a board meeting a fortnight later, or 3 weeks later, or some other period for time for collating the public comment and preparing it, instead of the rush that tends to happen now? Equally, on the other hand, we appreciate the cathartic effect these meetings have. Everybody knows they've got to work, they've got to get it done. We put a lot of energy in it and we get to a result. So there's obviously a lot of advantages in the present system. Perhaps we could do an economic study on the cost-benefit analysis of... All right. What I'd like to do now is see if there is any interest in public comment arising from the Accountability and Transparency Review Team's report. It made a number of recommendations in relation to aspects of the affirmation of commitments, performance against the affirmation of commitments in relation to relationships with the GAC, the way the board operates and qualifies itself and so forth, openness and transparency, and the review processes. So the floor is now open for discussion about Accountability and Transparency Review Team report. Kieran.
Hi, Kieran McCarthy, speaking as an individual. With regard to your comments, Peter, about how to improve, well, I've been on record 800 times saying I absolutely hate this format. With you standing a very, very long way away from us, up on a stage, me standing with a mic with a room behind me, I don't like it. I think it makes it adversarial. I know, having been on the other side, it's so easy to switch off, especially when it's going on for hours and hours. But I've made my views plain, and I think you've already got four or five reports that I've sort of authored and got the community on. So I'd like you to reread what I did. With regard to the ATRT, this was very important, and I think it's a shame. I think it was a great opportunity to shine, and I think there was some real issues with it. So the actual team had very, very little time to work. It basically had a year, because we knew as soon as the affirmation came in that there was going to be a year. But I can't remember how many months they actually had of work. It was very limited. And that was for a whole bunch of reasons. But I'd like you to sort of go over it and think about future reviews. How do you avoid that? Most of it came in admin. You lost several months choosing who was going to be on the team. There was a huge amount of admin in the process about where you're going to stay and what's the policy for this and what's the policy for that. So I think you really, it wasn't a good process, to be honest with you. I was somewhat surprised, I have to say, at the board's behavior at various points. At one point, you formed a working group within the board, and you started questioning whether the ATRT, whether it had done the right things, and you didn't provide it with the funds which held up its work. And I thought that was, I really think you stepped over the line considering what we were talking about here, which was the independent review in the affirmation of commitments. I think the board, you pushed it far too far. You crossed over a line, and I think you damaged US government relations because of that. So please bear that in mind. All that said, unbelievably, and I didn't think it would happen, the team actually came out with a whole bunch of good recommendations. Unfortunately, because they ran out of time, I think most of them are based on GAC board, that sort of things. In fact, the things I would really like to see them work on is exactly things like this: public forum, public interaction, public comment period, how participation works in ICANN. You ended up working a lot on the GAC and on the board itself. I understand why. And so broadly, I would say of those recommendations, once you take out the preamble and the waffle, I think they were pretty good. And I liked the meeting that you had with the ATRT as a board.
We've still got the clock running, Kieran.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You are now well over it. So
you had a good interaction. I thought the board was slightly defensive, but you opened up a bit. I actually think the ATRT has done a good job considering all those aspects, and I hope you take their recommendations seriously. Thank you.
Let me help you with some of the facts that the negotiations, the board is responsible for conducting those reviews. So it's perfectly appropriate. In fact, it would have been negligent for the board not to have formed some kind of oversight process to make sure that the reviews are conducted properly. That's what the working group and the board did. It never interfered in the independence. It worked very hard not to interfere in the independence of the ATRT. And the time spent discussing that didn't hold the working group up at all. The thing that held the working group up longer than the discussion about budget, in fact, was signing a contract with an external consultant, which is the kind of process that any review team is going to have to go through. So let's not say that the board crossed a line. Let's not say without authority of any sort that it interfered with relationships with anybody. And let's not say some of those other things. Let's get the facts right. Mr. Zook.
Peter.
We can take this offline, but I think you need to get... I can help you with the facts, Kieran, because that seems to be the problem here. Mr. Zook.
Yes, Jonathan Zook from the Association for Competitive Technology. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. I think ICANN has found itself in the center of a lot of criticism of late from a lot of different places and in a lot of different languages. And I mean, luckily, people can criticize and read criticism in their own scripts more easily now due to the increase in IDNs. But there's a lot of it swirling around, and I think the impulse to adopt a kind of siege mentality in that environment has got to be almost overwhelming. But I think there's two different kinds of criticism out there, and to conflate them would be a big mistake. I think there's both constructive and destructive criticisms, and both sort of idealistic and what might be considered fatalistic recommendations. And I think making the distinction between those two is imperative. There's been a lot of constructive criticism by fans of ICANN, both inside government, in the private sector, and most recently from the ATRT in the form of recommendations. And so while there have been various statements made over the course of the week that would seem to indicate some resistance to some of those recommendations, I would implore you that the best way to accomplish the kind of independence and sustain the independence you seek is actually through complete interdependence. And so I would suggest really adopting almost wholesale. Find the time, find the money, find the will to adopt all of the recommendations put forth by the ATRT. And please insert metrics to measure the success of those initiatives as well, if you would. And to save 2 minutes at 6 p.m., I think the strategic plan should include a call for metrics across the board. My Spanish language skills are sorely lacking, but there is a saying here in Colombia, mucho telin telin y nada de paletas, which roughly translates to all talk and no action. And I think of all the criticisms that are surrounding ICANN and the process of accountability and transparency, that is the one criticism that you can't afford to endure. Thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan. Just a very quick response. I haven't detected on the board as yet any resistance in relation to implementing any of the recommendations, but we'll be, because we haven't really received the report, it comes in on December the 31st. The impression I've had from the board so far, including the session that the board had with the ATRT, is that most of those recommendations seem very reasonable.
And I can say the same, certainly on behalf of staff.
So, I mean, this is an unofficial response. We haven't got the report.
I'm very excited to hear that. Mm. I mean, I hope that we're not all naive enough to believe that there haven't been some indications along the course of the week that there's some concern about the affordability, the ease with which they can be adopted. There's been pushback that the board may do some things and not do others. That's all I'm saying. I'm just encouraging you to simply adopt them and to find a way to do it. That's all.
If you read the affirmation of commitments, the independent review is done, and then the board has 6 months to decide what to do with those recommendations. until a scoping is done on what is required. Some of those are simple process changes, and their community's got to make decisions. Others definitely involve resources. And in order to be successful in doing what you said, which is doing the walk and not just the talk, we need to do that serious planning, and we'll be working on that. So no hesitance whatsoever to seriously look at all the recommendations. So thank you.
All right, thank you.
I just want to make one comment here just to jump in. You'll see what the process now the board's going to have to go through with these. I want to echo the fact that the board is not reluctant to reform itself. Many of us on the board have been asking for many of the reforms that are contained in these preliminary recommendations for years. But as you can see, it's a balancing act with budgets and with needs, et cetera. But I want to just encourage everyone in the audience to believe that we as a board are taking these very seriously and, in fact, are very excited about some of these, and we're looking forward to implementing them. We just need to figure out a plan to do so.
And one of our formal responses to the ATRT is, please give us the priority list so we know where, so we can get started on the most important ones first. So I'm not sure. So I'm just hope we've dispelled the sense that there's a them and us about this, or any resistance. I think there's a professional response to receiving these and processing them properly. But I don't characterise that as resistance. Thanks, Jeff.
Hi, Jeff Brueggemann with AT&T. I just want to applaud the work of the ATRT, and both in terms of the process that they used as well as the substantive outcome. And I do believe it was undertaken in a very constructive way, and that it helped set the model for how future reviews can be conducted. And I can tell you, as someone who is now on the Security, Stability, and Resiliency Review Team, we are approaching our work the same way. And I think hopefully the ATRT has helped work through some of the process issues as the first one out of the gate. I would also reiterate that I think follow-through and implementation is going to be very important, both because the recommendations will help to strengthen ICANN, and as well as the external perception of ICANN's standing and strength as an organization. And then finally, I just wanted to highlight and reiterate my earlier comments. I think paragraph 20, which focuses on the recommendation that the board should articulate the reasons for its decisions, should identify the public comments that it relies on in the affirmative, and also explain the public comments that it does not choose to adopt, is a very important part of the recommendations. And if I do a gap analysis, I think it's probably where we may be the furthest from where we are today to what is recommended. I think other aspects of the public comment process are more tweaking, but that one stands out to me as a more significant gap. Thank you. Great.
Jeff, I'd just like to thank you personally. As one of the co-selectors along with Heather, I think we're very proud of the exceptional candidates that applied to be on both the SSRT, the Security and Stability Review Team, and also the WHOIS. So thank you very much. Your points are well taken.
Okay, let's come to the side.
Thank you. My name is Wolf Ulrich Knoben. I'm from Germany, and we see internet services and provider and connectivity provider constituency, and I would like to make a statement on behalf of this constituency with regard to an item we think should be taken more attendance throughout this process. The internet service providers and connectivity providers constituency wants to congratulate the members of the review team for the amount of work done in such a short period and offer support for most of the draft recommendations. We would stress the need to implement the final recommendations in a timely manner. We appreciate that the review team based its analysis on several sources, input from the community, either in writing or in person, during the Brussels ICANN meeting, during interviews and fact-finding. Few issues still require additional consideration or refinement. Much of the review team analysis is focused on issues about the board and the governmental advisory committee in the context of generic domain names. The ISP constituency is concerned that issues related to IP addressing were not deeply analyzed. The ISP constituency is calling for more information and discussion on IP addressing issues at the ICANN level. The addressing community is facing difficult challenges. ICANN should fully play its role in this area with the full participation of all stakeholders, and so fulfill its commitment in the AOC, continually assessing and approving the processes by which ICANN receives public input. And as we go along, so we will provide more detailed written contribution to that to the chair of the review team. Thank you.
Thank you. I have to say I'm a little bit confused about what it is that the review team has been reviewing that would have included IP addressing issues. But, so perhaps look forward to the further information. Thank you.
Yes.
Amadeo.
Okay, first on the issue you raised about participation and the format of the meetings. This is my 34th public meeting of ICANN. I only missed three. I don't know where's my medal, but probably somewhere. I got one in Mexico, by the way. And I still feel, it's not that I still feel uncomfortable in this concrete public forum. I feel increasingly uncomfortable. We now don't have the written statements from the stakeholders. Now we have the written comments from the participants here in the public mic because they are under the double pressure of the stopwatch and a schoolmaster-mannered chairman of the meeting. And both things put a lot of pressure, which ends up in not having another solution. This is a solution of, you know, continuous monologues. There is no dialogue at all, while, you know, the board is either checking Facebook or perhaps listening, but we don't know. Perhaps we don't have any other solution for that, but we have solutions for other things. For instance, what's the way for the participants to give input on what's being cooking this week? I'm being invited quite often to be on a panel, but, you know, I never know even who are the other panelists. Why this panel or not other? Who's participating? Who had the brilliant idea? Whom should I tell that we would like discussing about a topic or not? There's never an available room for discussing anything. We spend the whole week here very often. We don't talk about things that are important, if not to this week's agenda. This week, I've been awakened each day at 4 in the morning by a journalist in Europe asking me questions about WikiLeaks, domain name warrants, and things like that. It has been mentioned before. We will live here without saying a single word. It's not in our mandate, but perhaps we would like some people just having half an hour or room to discuss this. And another thing that's missing is the general discussion. This is the only thing we have. We have the rooms. We have the constituencies, the houses, the stakeholders, the SOs, the acts. Each one has a mailing list and a room, and they discuss. But we lack things that really work to discuss as ICANN the topics that we are interested in. And I think there is room for improvement here. Regarding the review team, just one question. Regarding the review team, they've done a very good job considering the time frame they had for doing the actual job. And I apologize to them for my skepticism in what they would achieve. Congratulations.
Thank you. One of the places you can direct your comments about this is to the PPC, the Board's Public Participation Committee, which is charged with helping public participation in ICANN processes, including at the meetings. And the chair of that, the current chair of that, of course, is Ms. Jean-Jacques, and we'll be looking into that in the next few days.
Thank you, Steve Del Bianco with NetChoice. I'd just like to quote the paragraph from the Affirmation of Commitments, one little sentence that actually created the ATRT. It says, quote, ICANN commits to mechanisms for public input, accountability, transparency, so as to ensure that the outcomes of its decision-making will reflect the public interest and be accountable to all stakeholders, end quote. Now, the ATRT did an outstanding job on the accountability part, but not so much on the reflect the public interest part. And I don't blame them. How could they when we don't have any definition of what the public interest means in the ICANN context? But I believe the ATRT, as they move to final recommendations, should recommend a cross-community working group to define the term public interest and what it means for ICANN. And while they're at it, let's define one other term that's essential to two other AOC reviews. And that term is consumer trust. That's a requirement of the team studying who is right now, and it will be a requirement of the team that will study the new GTLD program a year or so from now. They're not self-evident terms, because consumer trust and public interest mean something totally different for ICANN than they would for an organization in charge of the global fisheries or world hunger. Now, there's three quick reasons why we've got to define it. First, if we don't define it, it won't mean anything. The second is that if we don't define it, groups may suggest their own definition in a way that could move their agenda and expand ICANN's scope. Third reason is that if we don't define them, ICANN stakeholders might think that we actually need to create new institutions and constituency groups to advocate for these undefined terms like consumer trust. One example was yesterday I attended a meeting of a group that wants to create a new constituency for consumer trust and consumer interests at ICANN. Look, when the AOC called for accountability, we didn't run and create an accountability constituency. We baked it into our DNA. So I'll close by saying, instead of defining a new institution to advocate our core values, let's define our core values so that we can institutionalize them in everything ICANN does.
Thanks, Steve. Aisha.
Thank you. Aisha Hassan from the International Chamber of Commerce. First of all, we've expressed our general support and really our pleasure at what the great work that the ATRT did and the recommendations that they came up with, which clearly reflect a lot of work by the various bodies, the community that on these issues over the past few years, and they did a great job of concretizing many of the recommendations that had emerged over the past couple of years. I was very pleased to hear earlier in response to comments about implementation that the board will be looking at implementation. ICC's comments, the overarching message was a lot of these recommendations are very solid and concrete, and we look forward to seeing them implemented as soon as possible. We have inserted specific clarifications and did participate in the ATRT's discussion with the community and have called attention to some of the specific clarifications that we've offered. I'd just like to underscore two of them. One of them is vis-a-vis the GAC. We think that the recommendations are a good path forward to continue to build that relationship, which is extremely important. And secondly, on the public comment and participation area, those recommendations as well, I participated in the Public Participation Committee's meeting this morning, and it's good to see the progress that's being made. Those recommendations will also go a long way to help that effort, and we hope that that will be implemented promptly. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Aisha. Can I just remind people, I know that the time clock puts pressure on you, but just remember that thing about pace for the interpreters and translators. Thank you. Marilyn.
Thank you. My name is Marilyn Cade, and I'm the CEO and principal of a small consulting company that focuses largely on internet governance issues. And I'm going to make a comment, first of all, of appreciation to what I consider a really kind of phenomenal process which we have instituted in a short period of time. And I do think that there were some challenges in both figuring out what the process was by which we would put names forward for the selectors to pick from, and there were also probably other challenges about how and when to get resources allocated. But we need to remember this was the first time we've done this and take the learning out of this and apply it to the review team process, which will be with us on a regular basis. So I want to say I think we should all look at this as a job well done. But my comment now is actually for the community before I go on. So I think that the review team has worked hard, and I'll make a comment about some of their recommendations. But my comment to the community is I think we failed to look hard enough and often enough at the reports that the review team has given us. And some of us, broadly, have not taken the opportunity to give you substantial comments on the recommendations that have put forward. So that's something that I think we have to take back as our own responsibilities to come back and say more. It's an awesome number of concrete recommendations, but not, of course, a concrete implementation plan. So I know how hard it is to assess how to implement things. And I think it should be welcomed by all of you as the board that we think it is a priority for you to find those additional resources to focus fully. I will just say that I did think the board was the recommendation was maybe navel-gazing a little bit about the board thinking itself about what new skills were needed, and I think that needs to be the community thinking about the skills of its governing board as well as the board providing input. I have other comments, but I will save those.
Thank you. I think I agree completely with the role of the community in helping develop the skill set. Mr. Foody, you get to be last on the ATRT. Thank you.
Okay, great. First of all, can I thank you for bringing the new GTLD discussion forward to the beginning of the meeting. I think that was really good of you, so thank you. The second point is regarding Steve Bianco's, Del Bianco's point about public interest. I've always thought public interest is fairly clearly defined, but if there's any doubt about it, since it's an agreement between the US government and ICANN, for either side to unilaterally redefine it, I think would be very unwise. And if it is to be redefined, it must be done with agreement of both parties. The other thing is maybe we could get a definition of stable. What is a stable internet? Thank you.
Thank you. Bruce.
Just wanted to pick up on a couple of things from the ATRT and also maybe just sample the room a little bit. So one of the comments I think, Peter, you're asking is whether these formats work well, and Kieran said he doesn't like the format. I hate the format too. I hate sitting up here. I think that's the wrong message because you are the community making the decisions. It appears as though we're somehow the gods of the internet, and you have to appeal to the gods, and they might give you, you know, something in return, which is not really the right way the process should be working. What the ATRT report said is that in the public comment forum, in the online public comments, there should be sort of a reply comment forum, which allows people to sort of state their views, but then comment on other people's views, and you can actually start to share and try and reach common views. And I don't think we do enough of that. There was a good session on recommendation 6, a couple of sessions this week, which I thought worked well. A couple of board members were there, but really the board members were just facilitating, chairing, but it was really sort of the staff working with the team to work out what the common ground was. So first question for the audience, raise your hand if you think this format is effective, this public comment forum that we're having right now. So maybe I can, it's a bit hard to see in the distance, but sort of 3 or 4 hands. How many people think it's not effective? Raise your hand. Okay, and everyone else is reading their email.
Okay, let's move. We're going to come to something that I like to do now, which is to thank people who've been working hard in the community. We had a process originally of only thanking board members at these forums, which gave, the impression that Bruce and others are, you know, trying to dispel. This is actually a community exercise, and there's a huge amount of work done by often unsung, unpaid volunteers in actually making the bottom-up consensus process work, the multi-stakeholder model. So it gives me pleasure now to confer thanks on your behalf to a number of people who have come and worked and have come to the end of their particular terms. I've grouped them into also organisational categories, and I'm going to call out the names, and if you're in the room, I would really like you to come forward, stand with your colleagues for a photograph and a chance for us to thank you, and then as you leave, we have a little certificate to record your our thanks. So the first group come from the at-large volunteers, and again, with apologies for mangling any of the names and languages that I'm not familiar with. Could we have Carlos Aguirre come forward? An ALAC representative from Lacralo from December 2006 to December 2010, so 4 years of work by Carlos. Sebastian Bachelet. We'll hear more about Sebastian tomorrow, but Sebastian at this stage is being thanked for being an ALAC Executive Committee Vice Chair, an ALAC representative from Muralo from March 2007 to December 2010. Find a place and hopefully your colleagues will gather around you. Bo Brendler, ALAC representative from Naralo from November 2007 to December 2010. Hawa Diakite, ALAC representative from Afralo from March 2007 to December 2010. Cheryl Langdon-Orr, chair of the At-Large Advisory Committee from November 2007 to December 2010. Alan Greenberg, vice chair of ALAC. November 2008 to December 2010, and a NOMCOM appointed ALAC representative from Naralo from November 2007 to December 2010. Dave Kusundoyal, African representative on ALAC from November 2008 to December 2010. Come and stand out front, you guys. The stage is yours. Didier Cuss. That's better.
You should know better than to give the stage to Cheryl.
Way to upstage the board. Go, Cheryl. Evan Leibovich from Naralo Chair from June 2007 to December 2010. Adam Adam Peak, NOMCOM appointed ALAC representative from Uralo from November 2008 to December 2010. Patrick Vandervaal, ALAC representative from Uralo from November 2008 to December 2010. Dr. V.C. Vivekanandan, ALAC representative from APRALO from 2008 to December 2010. And Carlton Samuels, ALAC Executive Committee rapporteur from October 2009 to December 2010. Is Carlton in the room? So, ladies and gentlemen, those are the members of the ALAC volunteer crew who have been here for many years working hard. They've come to the end of their terms. Please show them the appreciation they deserve. Thank you very much. You have built an institution, or I think we can be proud of. The next group is the CCNSO volunteers, and there's only one, and she's unfortunately not able to be with us because she's sick. That's Nashwa Abel-Dabaki. She's the NOMCOM appointee to the CCNSO Council from November 2007 to December 2010. We will convey your appreciation to her and her certificate. Now, from the thank you. And there are also going to be formal resolutions in relation to these people adopted by the board. Let's come to the GNSO. The first on my alphabetical list is Edmund Chung, councillor representing the GTLD Registry Stakeholder Group from March 2006 to December 2010. So that's 2.5 years of service by Edmund. Is Edmund in the room? Come on up. Terry Davis, NOMCOM appointee to the GNSO Council, from November 2008 to December 2010. Chuck Gomes, who nearly wasn't with us, but we're delighted to say is.
You can't keep a good man down.
Thanks, Chuck. Chuck was GNSO Council Chair in 2010, Vice Chair from 2008-2009, and a councillor representing the Registry Stakeholder Group from 2006 to 2010. Extraordinary service, Chuck. Thank you very much. Carolyn Greer. Nope. Sorry. Carolyn Greer is not with us. She was a councillor representing the Registry Stakeholder Group from December 2009 to December 2010. And Mike Roddenbaugh, from councillor representing the Commercial and Business Constituency from December 2006 to December 2010. Mike, welcome. Let's give him a hand. Guys, thank you for that. We do understand the hundreds of hours, the phone calls, the late nights, the millions of words, the crafting compromises, the hours of meetings that make the go to making ICANN what it is. Thank you very much. There are others. There are the next two board liaisons, and we're about to lose the services of Vanda Scartazzini. Vanda, would you stand? I think we might have a little gift from the board for you. And we're also losing the services of Yoni. Yoni, your turn to come out. Again, thanks to those who do extraordinary service as liaisons for their various communities and have to endure the hundreds of hours of board meetings, board calls, board conferences, board retreats, and the clamour on the board list. Let's move then to members. Sorry, just checking where we're up to on the agenda, which means we're back to, we can pick up where we were, which would be the host of the ICANN Silicon Valley meeting. Can we call on the host of that? And that's starting with Rob.
That would be ICANN. So in the late 19th century, a gentleman who was a robber baron was very prone to betting on horses. And he decided to enter a wager with another gentleman about whether a horse at a full trot, full run, had all 4 feet coming off the ground. And so he was also a governor of California around that time. And so they had a bet. And they had a bet about whether those feet came off. To do it, they had to invent a new technology. So necessity is the mother of invention. The motion picture camera was invented in the late 19th century in Santa Clara Valley on Governor Stanford's farm to win a bet. And that was the invention of the motion picture camera. Not long thereafter, the radio tube was actually invented in Silicon Valley in the early 20th century. And the first radio station was launched in 1909 in Santa Clara as well. As many of you know, the semiconductor that our technology relies upon was developed jointly through work in Texas Instrument in Texas and Silicon Valley. So in the 1950s, something very interesting happened when Bill Hewlett and David Packard and other students at a university started working in their garage to explore the potential for a new technology called the transistor. And in 1971, Don Hoffler wrote articles referring to Santa Clara Valley as Silicon Valley, and ever since, the name has stuck. Companies such as Hewlett-Packard, Xerox, Intel, Seagate, Cisco, Apple, Adobe, Google, Yahoo, and so many others have helped drive this Internet revolution since the 90s. And arguably, Silicon Valley has become a synonym for innovation worldwide and has been much referred to as a positive model for innovation around the world. It also, incidentally, was one of two nodes first connected that made the Internet happen. The first connection was between Los Angeles and Silicon Valley, and a message was transmitted by, I believe it was Charlie Klein, who recently joined us at our Silicon Valley office opening, sent the very first message on the Internet. So Silicon Valley has a special place, and that's why it seems appropriate that the broader Silicon Valley area, including San Francisco, be the site for our next public meeting, which will be held in March of 2011. More specifically, we'll be at the Westin Hotel, Westin St. Francis on Union Square in lovely downtown San Francisco. The thing I think you'll like about the venue is we'll all be in the same hotel if you choose to be. There should be enough room, and the meeting rooms will be there as well. And there's many great sites to walk to in the area. So we hope you'll all come join us in San Francisco in March. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rob. Great. Well, there's a couple of other announcements to go through. First of all, we're going to begin with a report from the chair of the 2010 nominating committee. So if I could invite Wolfgang to come to the stage.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, to come to the microphone.
How does it work? It should... we should have slides here.
Look, I'm sorry, we haven't set... if you can grab that microphone, bring it up on stage and do it from the stage, and then your...
I've got a microphone.
Yeah, well, he'll be...
Can we bring up his PowerPoint, please?
Yeah, ready.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, go from there.
Yeah, I can do it from here. Thank you very much. I want to report briefly about the work of the 2010 Nomination Committee. The committee is composed by members which are nominated by the various constituencies, and being for 4 years now in various nomination committees, I have to say that the nomination committee is probably the most democratic element in the ICANN structure, because the constituencies themselves elect their leadership. because the voting members in the nomination committee are selected by the constituencies, and they have the voting power to elect or select then the leaders for the organization. This is a bottom-up process which is really unique if you go around other corporations, mainly the, selection for leading positions is a top-down process, but here we have indeed a bottom-up process, and each constituency in the ICANN community has a right to send somebody, a voting member, to the nomination committee. And the interesting thing is also that the chair, the associated chair, and the advisor to the chair have no votes. So their role is to steer the discussion and really to let the constituencies decide who are the leaders of these organizations for the coming years. So we started, like always, with a call to send in statements of interest, and we received, like in previous years, a total of more than 80 SOIs, exactly 82. And you see already from the first figure here that there was a gender imbalance. So we got a lot of men, 78 men, and only 4 women. So geographically, it was right balanced, but the big imbalance is really in the application pool is the gender imbalances. So by region, you see this is fair, but there is another imbalance, is that the majority of the applicants want to have a board position. And this is also an important point, which probably the next NOMCOM has to fix. So we have to do more outreach to make the other positions more attractive, that we get better candidates for the councils and for the at-large advisory committee. I understand that a lot of people are looking first of the board, but to be frank, the policy is developed in the councils. And insofar, you know, membership in the council is probably much more important if you want to contribute to policy development in the ICANN community, then the best place is in the council. And I think the next NOMCOM will certainly try to communicate this better. So we had to fill in total 7 positions, 3 for the board, 1 for the GNSO council, 2 for the at-large advisory committee, and 1 for the CNSO council. And our selections were published already in early September. So we selected for the board of directors Shereen Chalabi, Bertrand de la Chapelle, and Erika Mann, one of the 4 women who applied under the SOI. So fortunately, we have a better gender balance in our selection than it was in the under the applications. For the GNSO Council, we selected Carlos Dionisi Aguirre from Argentina. For the at-large advisory committee, we selected Sebastian Bachelet and Mark Rodenberg, and for the CNSO Council, Sokol Haiku from Albania. Let me add one word to the at-large advisory committee, to Sebastian Bachelet, because as you have meanwhile seen, then after his nomination, he applied also for the seat from the at-large advisory committee for the board, and he won. So this has certainly created some problems for the nomination committee. So fortunately, we have a procedure in place. That means if one candidate is not available anymore, then we go to the alternate or to other alternates. And in the last couple of days, you know, we were trying to settle this problem with a lot of communication and legal advice. And I can make the announcement that just 1 hour ago, we got the confirmation from the NOMCOM members that we have selected as the European representative in the at-large advisory committee, Jean-Jacques Suprenard, a former ICANN director. Who hopefully will give the at-large community a higher profile, and we are looking forward really his activities, because he was a wonderful director in the 3 years when he served in the board. And as I said, the other councils and committees are as important as the board, and Jean-Jacques hopefully will make the right contribution to bring the voice of the at-large community also to the attention of the board. Just give you a short overview of how the nomination committee is working. So we try to respect, on the one hand, the confidential principle if regard to persons, but we try to be as open and transparent as possible with regard to procedures. And so it was known, and we communicated this also to the community, that we have phased our work into in total four phases. So we started with the outreach, then we had the evaluation phase, and finally the selection phase. All this is here, what you can see on the slides. We had a lot of teleconferences and in total two face-to-face meetings. And so it was a very careful process. And as you see from phase two, when we started the evaluation, we used an approach, what we called the World Cup approach, because if you have 80 candidates, you cannot handle all the 80 candidates until the very last moment. So we trimmed it down first to 40, and then made a deep diving from the 40s, and with external evaluation of the ONB company, we reduced it to 20, and then we discussed the 20 candidates in the final phase in the after the Brussels ICANN meeting. So that was really a very careful selection process, and the evaluation process was also very, very careful and surrounded by deep diving and individual discussion about each candidate. So that means we didn't ignore any single candidate. That means every candidate who applies under the SOI, got the same treatment, but at the end of the day, you cannot please 80 candidates. That means in the beginning, this is my own experience, is you have a lot of friends, but then when you make the decision, then the situation is a little bit different because you cannot please 82 candidates. Anyhow, the methodology we used, I said it already, was a truck system. This is the individual evaluation by all non-com members based on the SOIs and the references. Then we had the external evaluation by ONB. Then we had the specific deep diving by individual non-com members and the collective discussion of the results. And for the finalists, we had also personal interviews by the whole non-com, where we had 15 minutes discussion before the interview and then 15 minutes another discussion after the interview. So I think we did what we could to get a full picture about the candidate. The criteria, for our selection came out from also a lot of consultations with the ICANN community. We had discussions with the CEO and president, and we were very thankful that Rod Beckström came to our Seoul meeting. He came to an outreach meeting in Sharm el-Sheikh, and we had also a joint meeting in Nairobi. So, and he always, gave us guidance respecting the independence of the nomination committee. So that's certainly a fine line here, but certainly the nomination committee has to know what the CEO and what the board expects from the nomination committee. Even if we do not follow their guidelines, certainly we have to take this into consideration. We had also discussion with the chairs of the supporting organizations and advisory committees, so that we were good briefed when we moved to the final decision-making phase. Our criteria and when we came up said, okay, what is needed? And this has been the three main criteria for the individuals, in particular for the board. That means, is this a candidate who has experiences for public policy development and strategic planning? Is this a candidate who has experiences for corporate governance, management, and finance knowledge? And is this a candidate who has experiences with negotiations, dispute resolution, and consensus-building capacities? So when I compared our work with the recommendation one of the review team on accountability and transparency, I discovered that more or less we operated in the spirit of this recommendation. I made this already, the statement, 2 days ago when the discussion was here, and that's why I'm very thankful for this recommendation, and I express the support for this recommendation, saying that this recommendation is certainly doable. It should not be a problem to translate this recommendation into practice. So we had two problems. I mentioned that already, the gender balance and the concentration on the board positions. There is no need to go further here. And the problem is what we do with so many excellent candidates who finally do not make it to the board. So there is experience, knowledge, and wisdom of outgoing candidates, how this can be saved for the community. So we have excellent candidates who are not selected, how we can how we can integrate these candidates in other bodies of ICANN. I think these are some questions where we need further thinking about that, whether we have a committee of wise men or something like that, you know, where we can further benefit from this wisdom, experiences, and the knowledge of the outgoing candidates. I remember the time when Windsurf left the board, that the question was also, you know, what ICANN board can do without Windsurf. So certainly the ICANN board survived, but it always was very beneficial to have his voice directly or indirectly in the room. And I could imagine that here also something innovations can be introduced for the future. But this will be certainly the task of the next NOMCOM chair, and this gives me the opportunity now to hand over to the incoming chair. So I will be the chair until Friday noon, and then on Friday 1 o'clock, Adam Peek will overtake the nomination committee for the year of 2011. Adam was in the nomination committee also for a couple of years. We both served in two other nomination committees. So I think it's a good handover, and I will serve as an advisor to the chair for the next year. I thanks once again for the trust the community invested in me and the whole committee, the nomination committee. Certainly we did our best to serve the community, but we could not please everybody. Thank you very much. And Adam, probably you can just stand
Just hold a minute.
First, I want to thank you so much, Wolfgang, for helping to train so many people in this entire industry through your Diplo Foundation and what you've been doing for years, and now helping to shape the leadership. And we'll express our loss with the terrific board members we've been having, but so much appreciate your efforts. I particularly also want to thank you and Konak and Scenic for also the very nice, and the Internet Society of China for the very nice event that they did in Beijing, where they allowed us to meet various candidates, et cetera. I just wanted to call that. But thank you, Wolfgang. Vielen Dank für alles.
Bitte schön. Wolfgang, I want to thank you as well. We were just wondering with you. Well, let's thank, ladies and gentlemen, let's thank Wolfgang now for an extraordinary job done under difficult conditions. Of course, while we're singling Wolfgang out, please share that with the entire committee who've worked with you under this extraordinary process, the amount of work, the number of people you have to see, the whittling down you have to do, the balancing exercises that you've mentioned, the gender, the geography, and all those other things. It's an enormously difficult job, but tremendously important to ICANN. Thank you.
Thank you.
Should we have the other members?
Peter, if my...
Adam, sorry.
Yes, sorry. Just wanted to say thank you to Wolfgang for his introduction. Thank you to the board for your confidence. And I think the first thing, I will keep it brief. Just wanted to say, first of all, that I'm very pleased to have been able to invite Jacqueline Morris to be my associate chair. And I think that adds great strength to the nominating committee this year. A request to all of you, particularly to the board, I think, is we need your help in finding candidates. And we are looking for 3 members of the at-large, 2 members of the GNSO, 1 member of the CCNSO, and 2 directors. So I'd ask you to think about your networks, not just you here, but everybody in the audience, for candidates that I'm sure you know can fill these positions and help us to build the best possible pool possible. That sounded rather mixed up, but anyway. We want a strong candidate pool. And as Wolfgang has mentioned, it's important that we think about gender. And I think we need to think about our gender balance throughout ICANN. It's reflected actually in the composition of the nominating committee itself. 21 members, and we have 3 female participants in the committee. So if we can remember that men and women are needed in our organisation. Thank you very much and look forward to your support.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you. Next we come to thank the Ombudsman, and I invite Frank to come and present the report from the Ombudsman. Where's Frank? And can we get the Ombudsman slides up? Thank you, Frank. Well, I think the way Wolfgang did it worked very well in the absence of a...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be excessively brief to try to get you back on track, as always. The Ombudsman report has been on the website since Monday, and I'm pleased to take any questions from the table or the floor in connection to that.
No?
I guess everybody read it and really, really liked it. Amadeo City read it twice.
Frank, you know one thing about this community. If they don't like something, they're not shy in standing up and saying so.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't notice that before.
It must have been perfect.
Of course, they always do so in civil tones and civil. Respect for each other.
Yes.
I have a quick question, if I may, Peter.
Yes, Bruce.
Frank, in the ATRT report, it mentioned that they're looking at the review of our various, appeals processes, for want of a better word. And there was mention of they felt that the Ombudsman Office should meet the various international standards that might relate to that. I wonder if you could comment very briefly on whether you think the Ombudsman Office today does meet those, and if not, what are some of the things that would need to be changed, just in very summary form.
Thank you, Bruce. I had the opportunity to provide a briefing to Brian Cute on this matter, and I shared it with you yesterday. The Office of the Ombudsman is probably... This Office of the Ombudsman is probably the most scrutinized and evaluated Ombudsman's office in the world, not only against international standards, but also against standards that were developed within this office as I did my doctoral dissertation on developing blueprints for evaluating Ombudsman. The difficulty in putting this particular office neatly into a cachet of one of the various ombudsman associations that exists is that it is an executive ombudsman office. It is created by a legislative body, being the table, and performs a specific function of answering questions about fair treatment within the community. There is no specific ombudsman association in the world that caters exclusively to executive ombudsman. The United States Ombudsman Association and the International Ombudsman Association reflect either end of the spectrum, the United States Ombudsman being the classical or governmental ombudsman, and the International Ombudsman Association being organizational ombudsman, who have very different characteristics of dealing usually with staff issues, client issues, and who do not formally report. So there are elements of both. In the work that we've done in the evaluation of this Office of the Ombudsman, we have developed a checklist of the 50 top characteristics found across all ombudsman associations and have classified where this office fits in those. That has been reviewed by an independent third-party evaluator who has provided a commentary and who has put that's available on the website. Very early in the development of the office, I contracted with an evaluator from the International Standards Association, ISO, our organization, excuse me. They have two standards that deal with complaint handling, one for complaints internal to an organization and one complaints external, ISO 10,002 and 10,003. The evaluator went through our framework and our process and confirmed that the ICANN Office of the Ombudsman met all international standards with respect to complaint handling. My advice is that the office in and of itself is meeting all international standards, all national standards, and is a leader across the globe in the evaluation of standards for ombudsman offices. I think there are weaknesses, and those were addressed in the commentary. I think one of the weaknesses that does need to be addressed in terms of how international bodies look at, or state bodies or national bodies look at the use of having an ombudsman as a structure in their organization or government, is the linkage between the board and the ombudsman. I think one of the weaknesses that needs to be explored is the recommendation process. The bylaw 5 is very, very clear that the ombudsman is to make a report to the board and provide recommendations on how the ombudsman thinks that matters should be dealt with. A weakness in this organization is the reply back or the follow-up action. Normally, where there is a state legislature who has an ombudsman, the ombudsman will be authorized by law to demand a reply and report on the implementation of recommendations within 30 days. Obviously, in an executive ombudsman framework, where the legislature and the ombudsman are much more closely attached, that becomes more difficult. But I think part of the ATRT review and the review being taken up at this point should include an evaluation not just of the ombudsman, but the relationship between the ombudsman and the board of directors, and that will provide for a much more healthy and curative result to complaints that come through the office of the ombudsman.
Okay. Very fulsome reply. Thanks. Any other questions for the ombudsman? Any other questions from the floor? In which case, let me move to another part of this, which, of course, is to note that Frank is leaving us at the end of January next year. And Frank, of course, was our first ombudsman. He was instrumental in setting up the ICANN ombudsman framework and the online presence. So, Frank, could you come and join us on the stage? We have a little gift to note that. Frank also, as he said, earned his doctorate in online dispute resolution and the assessment of ombudsman officers while he was at ICANN. I understand that his doctoral dissertation on that won the prize for the dissertation from Monash University for doctoral theses that year. So, Frank, an incredible contribution. Thank you for setting up our office, and thank you for holding it to the high standards that you've always aspired to. Thank you very much. We have one more comment of that nature. We're also just noting that we have a certificate to mark the our thanks to Kevin Wilson, ICANN CFO, who will also be leaving in January. Kevin's not able to be with us at the moment. Kevin joined us as CFO in 2007, and at that stage was marked an important growth in the organisational development at ICANN. And during his time at ICANN, the budget has grown from $31 million to $55 million. He's also been instrumental during this time in helping us develop a number of very important policies relating to ICANN's finances, including cost accounting, procurement, disbursement, investment, international investment, as well as also being instrumental in developing the very important travel support program that we now have in place for community members. So, ladies and gentlemen, please join me in thanking Kevin Wilson for his sterling service. I know Kevin will appreciate that. He's got to know many of you very well. In fact, I also remember that I should have announced he opened our meeting in Seoul in Korean, which was a talent that I didn't know he possessed until I saw it in action. Back now to a matter of more substance for the community to help us with, and that's the XXX application. The board has on its agenda for tomorrow the XXX application. Is there any public interest or comment that you can help us with in relation to the XXX application? The floor is open. And while people are thinking if they want to make that, please, again, specifics are very much more helpful than please go ahead and do it or please go ahead and don't do it. Reasons and rationale are much appreciated. If you're ready at this microphone, we can begin with you.
So we have the 2 minutes.
We certainly do have the 2 minutes.
Okay. I'm Diane Duke. I'm the executive director.
And sorry, and remember, because it's being translated, you're going to have to speak slowly for those 2 minutes.
Wait a minute, I get 3 more seconds.
I'll restart the clock for you. This isn't one of those elevator pitches to a bunch of venture capitalists. This is, let's let the community share your contribution. Okay, let's restart the clock. Go.
I'm Diane Duke, the Executive Director for the Free Speech Coalition, the Adult Entertainment Industries Trade Association. I have letters of opposition from the world's other trade associations and the top Alexa-rated adult companies. Opposition from the sponsorship community has been established, and judging from the board member comments at the last meeting, I think you get it. Entering into a contract with ICM would be detrimental to our industry, ICANN, and the internet community as a whole. In its Wellington communique, GAC stated its concerns. ICM promised a range of public interest benefits as part of its bid to operate the .XXX domain. To GAC's knowledge, these undertakings have not yet been included as ICM's obligations in the proposed .XXX registry agreement. ICM's promises concerning the public interest are impossible to meet while still adhering to ICANN's mission. For an example, a man who immigrated to Iran from Iran to Canada reportedly ran an adult legal website. Upon his return to Iran to visit his sick father, he was arrested by Iranian officials. Last Monday, he was sentenced to death for operating the adult site in Canada. The first two promises addressed by GAC and ICM's public policy aspect address this issue. Take appropriate measures to redistrict access to illegal and offensive content. What is illegal and offensive content in Iran, is not in Canada. It is impossible for ICM to determine what is lawful and offensive for the World Wide Web. Second, maintain accurate details of registrants and assist law enforcement agencies to identify and contact the owners of particular websites if need be. Will ICM provide information to the Iranian government? That decision should never fall under the ICANN authority. GAC has raised issues at the heart of ICANN's mission. The board, disregarding GAC's advice, repeatedly restated makes ICANN vulnerable to the problems GAC has highlighted and shows utter disregard for GAC advice and input. I urged ICANN directors to vote against a contract for ICM or minimally postpone the decision until GAC issues are adequately addressed.
Thank you. Let's move to the other microphone. Kieran.
Hi, Kieran McCarthy, speaking as someone who has followed this for 5 years, I think it's been going on. I hope you find the courage tomorrow to approve it, despite probably having misgivings, and we can close this off once and for all with any luck. I just want to say that despite the fact it's been a big fight, quite a few good things have come out of this. So, for example, the new GTLD process, the board is now not deciding. I think that was part of a problem. It was the board that was deciding. Also, the IRP process was used for the first time, and it was very expensive, and it went on a bit too long, but it appears to have worked, and I think the fact that there was this very big dispute and it didn't descend into a lawsuit, I think is terrific, and it's real progress for ICANN. So, briefly, I hope you do approve it. I hope we can close the book on this, and I think that ICANN will be a better organization for having gone through all this.
Thanks, Kieran. I agree with all you say. Just be assured, it's not a matter of courage. This is a very brave board. It's a question of making sure the procedures are followed correctly. Thanks. Sir.
My name is Jeffrey Douglas. I'm the chair of the Free Speech Coalition. It's an honor to address you. Appreciate it. There is no good that can come of the ICM proposal. There are reasons that every adult stakeholder opposes the proposal. Imagine the difficulties for international commerce if several countries blocked .biz, .net, or .org. All the major .coms would be severely handicapped because of their interdependence and interactivity with the other top-level domains. The .com's ability to function in the blocked countries would be impaired as well. Yet it's inevitable that .XXX will be blocked by numerous countries. So all of the existing adult .coms will either be compelled to avoid interactivity with .XXXs or face compromise in their interface with the blocking countries. Perhaps this is a matter of indifference to many here, for it is merely pornography. Yet ICANN is about to embark on a vast expansion of the TLD space by introduction of gTLDs. It is unwise at this time to introduce a TLD which guarantees passionate governmental opposition, for it establishes a precedent of tolerance for expected government blocking. Furthermore, GAC's opposition apparently would be disregarded if the board were to adopt. Consider the message that sends to the countries whose endorsement of the ICANN model is essential for ICANN as we know it. This would be a precedent for disregarding the dissent of one of the most important participatory constituent groups. Should it be adopted, each constituency group must come to the terms of the new reality that no matter how strongly one opposes, their opposition may be disregarded if the right combination of factors occurs. I urge the directors of ICANN to reject the proposal as you have done before, despite the exhausting process that this has undertaken, for the sake of the constituency groups, and I urge the members of the constituency groups to communicate to the directors your concerns of how endorsement of this proposal could harm your interests and that of ICANN. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the measured pace, which is helping the interpreters. Now, I see that we have an online comment. Felice, can I just make the comment that the remote participation facility is actually designed for people who are not in the room. They are the occasional person in the room who, either because they don't want to get up or because they want to jump the queue, is sending a message to the online participation. We'd prefer that not to happen. We'd prefer that to be for people who can't physically be here. So, Felice.
The remote comment is from Reed Lee, Free Speech Coalition. During the long debate over the proposed .XXXSTLD, the ICANN board has naturally been preoccupied with questions of community support and more general questions about the domain name space. But it has not addressed, at least not publicly, ultimate questions about whether a .XXXSTLD is a good idea at all. Good for ICANN and good for the Internet. It is a bad idea because it will focus a vigorous, widespread, and never-ending debate on ICANN and on the DNS. ICM simply cannot deliver on its promises to keep all sides in the porn wars heavy, and its failure on the score threatens to land those problems on ICANN's doorstep. Important policy questions, even the membership of IFOR, International Foundation for Online Responsibility, remain unanswered, at least publicly, after many years. Important concepts such as online responsibility remain dangerously unexplored. This is because questions such as these are intractable. ICANN should not contract with ICM on the hope and the promise that these questions will be answered later. The board should not approve the ICM proposal unless and until it is confident that these matters can be addressed consistently with an internet which remains free and open. At this juncture, confidence on the score is nowhere in sight. Thank you.
Thanks, Felice. Are there any other remote participant comments? Okay, let's come back to this side, which is Marilyn Cade.
Thank you. My name is Marilyn Cade, and I'm the CEO and principal of a small consulting company. I want to start out by mentioning to the board something I've said before when I've made comments, and that is that my background includes being a child abuse and neglect worker and helping to start many of the groups in the United States which looked at the thorny issue of the role of filtering and the role of tools in the early days of the Internet and how parents and caretakers could protect children online. I say that because I am aware, because I continue to work in this space in a collaborative way, that many of the child safety experts have in fact consulted with the applicant for .XXX and have lent some support and education and contribution to some of the improvements that have been made by the applicant to address many of the questions that have been made. That is an important item, and when I look at what the applicant has done to add IP protection mechanisms and other kinds of responses to questions that have been given before, what I've seen is that applicant has addressed all of the questions. So our bylaws require us to treat applicants in a fair and predictable manner according to the rules by which the award at the time, the application at the time, is governed. We all are aware that the board previously rejected the application and there was an independent review. And the independent review by a majority did find that there was a problem with the overturn. We will have objectionable strings, objectionable to someone in the route. And I think it's important that the board approve this and go forward and put this string in the route and let .XXX fulfill the commitments it's made in the contract agreement it has proposed, and you have proposed to negotiate with them.
Thank you, Marilyn. You, sir, your turn.
Good afternoon. My name is Claudio Menegatti. I represent ICM Registry. I've been working in the adult industry for the
Could you just put the microphone up a little?
Sorry. I've been working in the adult industry for the last 10 years with, I think, the biggest players on the internet, mobile, and satellite television. And I've been following the application of ICM for the .xxx with anticipation, to be honest. And since I represent them from June this year on several big trade shows, all the industry people that I meet are very excited, basically, for the possibilities that .xxx will give them, like more like an added value and a new way to promote their business. And I think also the, the way that ICM and I4 is creating a platform to promote the whole .xxx internationally, they appreciate it a lot. So they can represent them as good businessmen who want to do the normal business. I think also one of the points which is important I want to point out here, that European webmasters understand maybe more about TLDs because they used to work with CCTLDs and the GTLDs, which is part of the standard marketplace. In general, I want to conclude that the people I know, and I know most of the adult industry people, are quite excited for the long overdue launch of .xxx. Thank you.
Thank you. Across to the other side, Becky.
Thank you. My name's Becky Burr. As everybody knows, I have worked with ICM since December of 2003. So this is a familiar, unfortunately, familiar place to be. I want to address one tiny but very significant issue and call on you all to make a reality and an honesty check here. We have heard the latest song of breaking the internet because governments are going to block TLDs, et cetera. I want to point out two things. First, governments do block TLDs now. That's not a desirable thing. Second, ICM, every site registered in XXX will have a tag, and it can be blocked by the tag. There's no need to block it at the registry level. That differentiates it in very significant ways. Third, if you guys approve 500 new GTLDs next year, I guarantee you that there are going to be 250 of them that some government is going to want to block. So what really needs to be happening with respect to this is the development of practices and information about how to safely block TLDs, if that's what you want to do, without breaking the internet. So I find this sort of desperate. Now we have a new reason not to approve XXX, which is because it's going to break the internet, which we never really heard before. I hope you guys will all take that for both the important global issue it is and for an issue that is not really limited to this TLD, and this TLD will not be the tipping point.
Thanks, Becky. On this side, you, sir.
My name is John Van Arnam, and I've been a member of the online adult entertainment community for 14 years. I'm the owner of iBridge International. It's an e-commerce consulting firm. I'm also the director of the Association of Sites Advocating Child Protection. I've had the pleasure of working with the ASACP, which is an industry watch group within the search engines and within the largest communities in the adult entertainment space, and to further the reach of the search engines and these communities in offering child protection. I do not own adult websites. I do not produce or distribute content. I'm here to offer my support for .xxx and for ICM in their efforts to assist the industry increase its reach in a thoughtful and child-protective manner. I began working with the ASACP because of a false perception that the depiction of the sexual exploitation of children in the online adult entertainment industry are somehow linked. They're not. That work involved efforts within the policy, editorial, and legal departments of the largest search engines in the world. It was clear from that effort that any effort to protect children was important and valid and worthwhile, and it was this element of .xxx that caused me to take a much stronger look at the offering of ICM. While I understand the argument exists that .xxx could potentially make it easier for for children to, for minors to find adult material. It's an argument that I don't agree with, but there can be no doubt that the ability for parents and concerned families to filter out this material simply by thoughtful consideration of a .XXX label is valid. In addition, protecting the exploitation of children and being able to filter out and easily determine where this content is coming from would help. I don't pretend that the approval of .XXX will immediately eradicate the exploitation of children online, but I'm here to tell you that it will help. I'm here from the online adult entertainment industry to tell you that .XXX will help kids. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Foodie.
Hello. Yeah, I didn't want to get up again on this, but I think the, that there is a need to tie in .xxx with .com, and two reasons. At the moment in Canada, there's a public information film going around how child pornography offences have increased by a factor of 10 in 10 years. Now, that may well be down to better policing methods, better detection methods. That's debatable. But there was an incident in Vancouver about 3 months ago in a place called Pitt Meadows where a 16-year-old girl was gang raped at a rave party. And this girl, the allegations were that she, it was consensual and it wasn't, you know, actually rape. But the interesting point was that there were a number of observers. And these guys, the observers, were between the ages of 16 and 20, whatever it might have been. And rather than try and intervene, these guys started filming it on their cell phones. And they posted images of these to Facebook. And the thing went viral. And that's the sort of impact that exposing kids to porn on a daily basis has had. They are now so unaware of what is right and wrong, that they feel that when they witness a rape, the
Mr. Foodie, can you link this to the problem that we have at the moment, which is whether or not the XXX application meets the requirements that have been set for new TLDs?
Well,
there's not a discussion about porn or changes in social reactions. I don't want to cut you off, but we need information about linking about the contract application that we're faced with. This is not a debate about whether porn is good or bad.
Well, this is a debate about whether or not the XXX is the right application. And to let it go through without linking it to...
No, it's not about whether it's the right application. It's about whether or not the applicant has met the criteria that we set out for them for getting a new TLD.
Okay, well, to my mind, they are people who are already being served by the internet. They don't represent a community. The community that is not being served here is the community of people who don't want their kids to be exposed to anything and everything other people want to put on the net.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Ms. Duke, let's come back to you.
Diane Duke, Free Speech Coalition. I wanted to address the other two points GAC brought up, and one of them is the supporting the development of tools and programs to protect vulnerable members of the community. We've been talking a lot about child pornography and children. The Child Protection Advocates, including ASACP, has sent the board a letter. ASACP does not believe that .XXX will help vulnerable communities. It will also, it also thinks that it will facilitate easier, it'll make it easier for kids to get a hold of adult entertainment on the internet through search engines. So ASACP has taken a position that it will not help protect children on the internet. So even whether one of their board members feels that way or not, the organization itself has sent ICANN a letter on that to that effect. Finally, also the intellectual property. Yesterday, when I went to the IPCR, I guess it was the day before yesterday, they all blur, ICANN made a proposal at which, and it did a presentation at which it talked about how the adult businesses would not be able to park their domain names. And they had, and ICANN's president told the adult entertainment industry, told me personally and on many interviews that we've had together, said that adult businesses would in fact be able to park domain names. Unfortunately, that is not the case. They promised the adult industry that they could park their names. ICANN informed the IPC that adult businesses will not have that option. Adult businesses are concerned about the trademark and traffic and equally concerned that ICANN so readily lied to them. Again, I urge you to vote no on a contract with ICANN.
Thank you. Wendy. Oh, I'm sorry, this side. I didn't see.
Okay. Thank you. I'm standing as a mother, as a wife, and as a concerned citizen of the world that we want to build a better world. And I want to challenge ICANN whether the overriding interest will be that Triple X has met your criteria, and as such, our children will be exposed. I'm coming from an environment that the parents are illiterate. They wouldn't even know how to block anything. The child goes all the way to do whatever he wants to do. We have learned of hacking. I don't know how resilient the blocking will be, how protective our children will be. By the time we agree that we give such approval that Triple S should be, is adult. We are making argument is adult. And I want to raise two issues. There are technical issues, there are political issues. And I want to say that from the point of view of the developing countries and countries that are not interested in doing this one, in exposing our children, there will be a problem of people raising up our flag to the highest level to say, look, if ICANN is going this way, then we should take over the management of the domain name. So there are other issues that we should consider. It's not just that they met the criteria for the application, but there are moral issues. There are moral issues involved in this case. So I want to challenge. I want to implore the board to look to hear the voice. There are handwritings on the wall that we need on the wall that we should read. We shouldn't just read the papers. Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you, Wendy Seltzer. I think that the Triple X applicants have followed the process that ICANN set out for them, and as such, ICANN is not in the content business and should not be in the content and morality business. If its process was followed, the application should be approved. And to tie it back to our morning or earlier afternoon conversation, I think the rapid and reliable process for the introduction of more top-level domains can drain some of the tension and momentous nature out of the approval of each and every one. There's clearly dissent among what should go into particular strings when there are only a few of them. If there are many of them, each group with differing opinions can apply for its own place in which to house those.
Thank you, Wendy. On the side, Eric.
Thank you, Peter. I really don't want to speak long because I'd be repeating what I said the last time I came to the mic to speak to this issue, which is that Triple X met the criteria that we published in the 2004-2005 period. And that should be sufficient. We don't need to be changing or creating a system in which we don't actually state what the requirements are, but we edit them in real time. Subsequently creating, problems like the one we're experiencing today, in which we have to continuously ask, did we do the right thing in 2005? So I urge you to continue to ask or respond, as Peter just did in his comment to Mr. Foote. The real issue is, did the applicant meet the published standards, and is that sufficient? And I think it is. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. I'm Nick Wood from Validaeus. A year ago, I approached ICM because I work in the business of rights protection, and many of my clients were very, very concerned about Triple X. It's not an easy concept for a large brand owner to consider. Do they register defensively? Do they sit back? Do they participate? What do they do? Yesterday, I attended the IPC meeting, and I was very pleased at the end of it, for a reason I will tell you in a minute. I was very pleased at the end of it to hear the IPC meeting say they were satisfied with the rights protection measures that are there. And I was pleased because I've been spending 6 months working with ICM on these rights protection measures. I've employed some new people. I've hired a new office. We're spending money. I really, really hope that you're going to go ahead. And I'm saying that on behalf of myself, my own business, but also for the community. The sense of sort of pregnancy. Please help us deliver this. Thank you.
Thank you. Cheryl.
Thank you, Peter. I'm speaking in an absolute personal capacity, and it's probably the toughest thing I've ever done here today. I'm here to remind you that it's all about process, policy, and the fact that people have or have not met the requirements. And I urge you to approve the XXX-sponsored TLD. And I urge you as a survivor of pre- and post-puberty sexual abuse. So if the morality issues are suddenly made different because the internet's suddenly here, I don't understand how humans have been abhorrent to each other since we came out of the trees.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Cheryl, thank you for your courage and your sharing and for the power of your message. Thank you very much.
Indeed. Russell.
Yes, good afternoon. Russell King. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of ICM Registry. I've been with the company for 6 months. Since your decision in Brussels to move forward with our application, I think we've absolutely followed the process. I think we've gone above and beyond. We've partnered with global security companies to offer the sort of malware scanning that we think all e-commerce should offer. I would like to respond to the issue of blocking. We've certainly offered the opportunity for members of the adult community who don't wish to participate, they're certainly welcome to part their name. So I would urge you to move forward and let us move forward with our business. Thank you.
Thank you. And John, you have the honour of closing this.
Well, or boring you to death. My name is John Berryhill, and I'm speaking as a citizen of a country. I don't know yet. The prospect that national governments seek to enforce their laws within their borders is not something I don't think anyone has ever seen as an unusual threat or an unusual phenomenon. It's simply the definition of sovereignty. We've successfully conducted ICANN meetings in countries run by governments which don't recognize certain other governments. And while I had to go a week without the inspiring words of a certain dear leader during the Seoul meeting, we somehow muddled through. But, you know, certainly there are countries and even countries in the developing world in which certain types of content is objectionable. And in some of those same countries, the execution of human beings for holding certain religious beliefs or sexual orientations is perfectly acceptable. We recently had a UN resolution where the governments of the world could not agree on whether or not the execution of persons on the basis of sexual orientation is or is not acceptable. But approval of this application for an addressing system on a computer network is not a threat to the sovereignty of any government. And the assertion of the sovereignty of any legitimate government, whatever it wants to do within its own borders, is not a threat to the survival of the internet or ICANN.
Thank you. Khaled.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I did in the during the Lisbon ICANN meeting, where this was first deliberated in front of the board, I wish to go first on the record, and perhaps the transcribers could put this in capital. I'm neither for nor against, but I would like to address an issue which I think the board is probably well aware of in the on the issue of freedom of expression and perhaps what has been believed to be the term blocking. Within the United States, and maybe let me add also a flavor of culturalism as well. Within the U.S., we all know that the word blocking has always been used to refer to censorship about political ideas, et cetera, et cetera. From a cultural point of view, and I speak here from a hat representing a different culture, it is not about freedom of expression, whether we provide certain content to communities, whether they choose to block it. And I think the ICANN board would be wise to only consider the facts of whether this meets or doesn't meet, instead of getting or dwelling into the issue whether blocking is a legitimate or illegitimate, or whether it's actually curtailing the freedom of expression. pornography, so to speak, or adult content from certain from the culture, from the perception of some cultures, is not an expression, a freedom of expression. So, and I'm sure you are wise enough to recognize these points and deliberate on the issues at hand and the way it should be considered. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're closing the topic on that. Is anybody on the board has a comment? I see none.
I do. I just have one comment.
Rita.
I've been listening to the debate here, and I'm sad to say that I've had it a few times while I've been on the board, but I'm thankful for those that are reminding us that this is about process. To me on the board, I don't even think that we have to decide whether this applicant meets the criteria. I think the independent review panel said that it does. So really what we're trying to do now is figure out how we follow our process to make sure that it gets into the root.
Peter. Peter. Peter,
oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, I'm looking. I thought there was somebody on the board.
That's me, Peter.
It's up on the gods up there. Feliz, is there somebody online?
Right. We have a remote comment from D.V. Simon Nunkalit. Again, apologies if I'm pronouncing that wrong. Ministry of ICT of Indonesia. If XXX will become sponsored TLD, this time GAC lost again with their morality and public order. Morality and public order will go to trash, and GAC has already spent more time meeting to draft morality and public order. How ICANN will take position about this? XXX will become registry who feed ICANN. Meanwhile, GAC is advisory committee that give ICANN advice only. Thanks.
Okay, let's close that topic and move to the next one, which is a discussion on ICANN's draft strategic plan. And I'm looking, making sure that Kurt is going to be ready to help with that. Thank you, Kurt. Questions on the strategic plan? Thank you, David.
Hi there. I'm Chris Chaplow from...
I'm sorry, Chris.
Sorry. Vice Chair of the Business Constituency, Vice Chair of Finance and Operations. On behalf of the business constituency, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to review the strategic plan and for inviting early constituency input into the FY12 framework and budget. The last year, the FY11 budget was really very just headlines, and it was very difficult to make any valuable comments on that, and I think it was presented too late in the cycle for us to be able to help you. So I understand that there's better systems in place this year, so we look forward to an FY12 draft budget being much more granular so that we can give you the feedback that's worth having. And it only remains obviously for us to thank Kevin for all the hard work that he's done over the last few years, for coming to our meetings, for answering our questions, and to warmly welcome Wan to carry the torch for you. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. And we'll make sure that Kevin gets those thanks. Any other comment on the strategic plan? Just while anyone else might be, there were some people at the end of the nominating committee process who felt that they hadn't got to the microphone in time to ask some questions of the nominating committee or about the nominating committee process. If we can come back to that in any other business if those questions are still extant. Dr. Lee.
Thank you, Peter. Yang Lee, CNSO Council, but speaking on my personal behalf. I would first like to congratulate the NOMCOM for their success in selecting one of the most competent people for the positions they are filling. I have personally noticed the diversity and the competency that the NOMCOM appointed members of the CNSO Council have been bringing into the CNSO community. I would go so far as to say that the establishment of the NOMCOM committee representing the multi-stakeholder model has generally been a huge success. I'm here to point out one special area that is enabling us to have more confidence in the NOMCOM. This is related with the third criteria for selection, the one emphasizing that the selected candidates will produce the broadest cultural and geographic diversity on the board. I spoke at the public forum of ICANN's November 2008 Cairo meeting, emphasizing the underrepresentation of certain regions and the overrepresentation of certain regions on the board and the ICANN staff. As you are well aware, this has been a factor in the unprecedented decision by the board to hold the ICANN meeting in the AP region twice in a row, resulting in a most successful Seoul meeting in October 2009. I also noticed that ICANN now provides information about the board representation by nationality on its website, which I see as a conscious effort on the part of ICANN to ensure regional diversity. I'm also happy to see that the ASO has selected Kuo Wei as an Asian candidate as its representative to the board. In addition, I commend the NOMCOM for selecting an additional Arab-African candidate to fill one of the seats of the three departing board members from the European region. I would like to encourage the NOMCOM to continue this attention to geographic diversity and to notice that the NOMCOM has not yet selected a candidate from the East Asian region and to consider this when they begin their work next year. Lastly, I hope, and this was a concern that was expressed by Wolfgang, I hope that the NOMCOM maintain consistency in its evaluation criteria by considering the excellent candidates from previous years. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just to make the obvious point that the NOMCOM can only work with the material that it gets, and that the most important thing in terms of increasing gender and other diversity is for us to go out and make sure that we are collecting and attracting and bringing those candidates to the nominating committee. So just to repeat the call that Adam made, make sure that we are using our extensive networks to help that process. Sir.
Hi, my name is Evan Leibovich. I have been the chair of At-Large North America, coming into ALAC, and I simply want to comment on the strategic plan to let you know how delighted I was when Kurt displayed the strategic plan, and I saw a note about registrant rights being a component of that strategic plan. This is something that I think is very important to both the At-Large and other communities. And I look forward to working with the board, with other constituencies, and with staff on moving this forward. It's already come a long way since it was almost an afterthought of the RAA amendments meeting called the aspirational document, and I really look forward to seeing it move ahead. Thanks.
Thank you. Naomasa.
This is Naomasa Maruyama from Japan. One small correction to Ms. Lee's speech. There was a person, Mr. Ito Joichi, was selected as a board in the previous.
Ah, thank you for that correction. All right. Any other? Are there any other matters of general business that the community wants to take up with the board while you have us at your disposal? Kieran.
Hello, Kieran McCarthy here, and with a different hat on, which is as the organizer of a conference in San Francisco in February, all about new GTLDs, which will hopefully you will have sorted the rules for by then. So I would like to invite you all as board members to come to that. It's the business of running GTLDs, and I hope it will be enormously valuable for you and for ICANN staff and for the community. So do please come along, and we'll have a very interesting conference and hopefully make the whole GTLD process go extremely well. Thank you.
This is a paid advertisement sponsored by... thanks, Kieran. If we can, I'm sure many of us will be there. Yes, your turn. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. I'm Fatima Desey Silla from Senegal, chair of At-Large Afral. But I'm speaking...
Can you talk more into the microphone for me, please? I'm having trouble. Or turn it up, please.
Is it okay?
Yep, thanks.
Better? I would like to inform the community about the application of Senegal to host the 42nd ICANN meeting in October 2011 and seek for their support. Key points to consider. Senegal, West African country, French-speaking, democratic, and politically stable, never a military coup, never a military regime, nor a coup. And Dakar, the capital city, is the most advanced point in the Atlantic Ocean in Africa, facing America. Senegal is very committed to the development of ICT and internet in Africa with the leadership of its president in charge of the ICT component of the NEPAD. Senegal has the right infrastructure to organize such an event. One, we have several five-star hotels, about 30 hotels around the main menu, the main venue, meaning Hotel Meridian. Some of them are at walking distance, and the Radisson Blue is at 10 minutes walk, drive. We have direct flights from almost all the major cities in the world. Senegal has experience of organizing big events, such as we have organized events from 1,500 people to 5,000 people. From 2005 to tomorrow, we'll be organizing the FESMAN, the World Black Arts Festival, and we're expecting more than 5,000 people. Senegal has the support of all the African countries. So we invite you to support our application and to come and enjoy our country's teranga, meaning our hospitality in Dakar, October 2009. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very, very much for the expression of your willingness to host the ICANN meeting, the next ICANN meeting in Africa. And I also encourage you to have discussions with Barbara Clare, our Vice President of Communications, who helps to organize such a event. Barbara, can you raise your hand here? Okay. Fatima, thank you so much. Thank you.
Ed, can I just explain that, in case it's not clear, that we've taken the board out of making that kind of decision. The board's role in this is not to act as the meetings committee and pick places that we like. The board's role is to select, is to set out the criteria for meetings and what the choices are, and then we leave that largely to staff to check the applications that they come in. I just mention that because one of the things we want to try and avoid is lobbying of the board about meeting venues. We have very little influence in relation to that, except to check that our policies have been properly carried out and the place that has been selected has been done using the process. So just to make that clear. Okay, Bertrand, it's a great pleasure to welcome you to the microphone.
Absolutely. I couldn't resist the pleasure of congratulating the nominating committee for the remarkable indirect contribution they have made to the efficiency of the public forum, because by putting me on the board, which I'm very honored, we have obviously gained more than half an hour of speaking time.
Bertram, I'm just resisting making the obvious corollary. That means board meetings are going to be how much longer? It's been a great pleasure to have Bertrand already participating in our debates and contributing fantastically.
My name is Mary Uduma. I'm from Nigeria. First, I want to congratulate the board, especially the CEO, the speech he made, the opening speech, concerning the new relationship with ITU. I'm excited about it, and I want to say that it's a good development, and I wish that it continues. The dialogue, not only with ITU, with other international organizations like the UPU and the rest of them. So I really want to congratulate you on that. And want to support Senegal to host. We're not asking the board. We're not lobbying the board. We're just saying the community should know that Senegal wants to host. And Nigeria will want to host at 2013. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And just to share, it's really been a great year of progress in partnering and collaboration between ICANN and members of the United Nations family. Dot Post was delegated into the route, and we've entered in a very good working relationship with the Universal Postal Union. We also signed a MOU with UNESCO on the introduction of IDNs, a support for IDNs in more countries around the world. And we're also very, very pleased to be seeking and working towards improved relations with the ITU. So thank you so much for your support for that. Thank you.
Mike.
Thank you, Peter. Mike Palage. In 11 years of ICANN, one of the more interesting processes that I participated in last year was the nominating committee. And I really appreciate the leadership that Wolfgang and the rest of the committee members did in selecting the current slate that we've put forward, not only on the board, but of the entire leadership. One of the things I'd like to address, though, was there were some criticisms that I and others heard from the community about the non-selection of some of the sitting board members and how that impacted chairs of the committees. I think there were three chairs of different committees that we kind of, kind of took that leadership from the board. And the reason I think this is important from a board governance standpoint is, as I look at some of the committees, I see some of them a little thinner than when you and I were serving on the board, Peter. And, for example, I would look to the board governance committee. During the years when you and I served, that was a committee in and around of, say, 5 to 6 people. We now have a situation where it's 3 with Rom serving as an observer, which creates a situation where 2 directors can potentially control the outcome. I think it would really be important in diversifying the leadership so that we don't have that failover to perhaps enhance the number of directors that sit on some of these boards. And I don't think it will necessarily increase or decrease the efficiency, but provide more of a leadership capacity for future transition. Thanks.
Sorry. Can I just ask a question? I don't understand at all the connection between your removing a number of chairs and the size of the Board Governance Committee. Can you just help me with that?
Well, what the concern that some people had raised is that we had, stole leadership quality. And so the problem is, if you have more people serving perhaps as a vice chair in a board governance committee, the ability for someone to step in and provide leadership, I think, is there. When you only have 3 people serving on a committee and you lose the chair, so let's just look at a board governance committee. You have 3 people, Dennis, Rita, Ray, and Rom as a non-voting observer. Rita's term, she's up for re-election very shortly. In 6 months, she may or may not be reelected. There's the potential that within a 6-month period of time, your board governance committee will lose 2 of its 3 members. So I think when you look at this from a governance standpoint and making sure that you have a bench with quality that will be able to step up and provide this leadership, I think this is something that was there when we served on the board and we had a board committee of around 5 to 6 people. I think 3 is cutting it a little tight. And not only is it cutting it tight, as I said, you know, I don't want to use the word capture, but you do have a situation where 2 directors can it basically essentially dictate the outcome of a board governance issue.
I see. So guarding against the future prospect that the NomCom will again remove 3 committee chairs, we should make sure there's always a backup against that.
No, I think it's good governance to sit there and have the leadership of the board have a well-established committee. I think 3 members on a key committee is cutting it thin, Peter.
I get that. Yep. I think whatever. So, yes, nice to see you.
My name is Philip Okundi. I'm chairman of Communications Commission of Kenya, and I'm currently leading the Kenya group who are in this meeting. I would like to congratulate the leadership of ICANN, who I've seen in my time in meetings in ICANN, considerable democracy being displayed and very good meetings taking place, and allowing the members who attend this meeting to express their views very freely and find a medium through which an agreement is agreed. So I really wish to congratulate the leadership. I wish to congratulate you all very much indeed. Also, I want to thank ICANN to have helped the process of electing one of my colleagues from Kenya, Alice, as vice chairman of GAC. And we think this is a very good honor to Kenya. We are very happy about it indeed. And also, now that I have the opportunity, I want to thank all of you who came to Nairobi for the ICANN meeting, which we thought was very successful. It gave us, as a country, considerable insights to the work of ICANN. And you can be sure that you have a very good support from Kenya. Finally, I am happy on behalf of my country to support the offer of Senegal for the hosting of ICANN conference after we've done the one in Francisco. Thank you very much indeed.
Philip, I would just like to thank you, sir, for the amazing job that you and the Kenyan government and KNIC and the community in Kenya did in hosting that beautiful, stunning meeting we had in March at the Kenyatta Center. I think we're all going to remember it. It was just an amazing week. And let's give Philip and the Kenyans a hand for that amazing event. Thank you.
And may I just add a word. Next year, September, we in Kenya are really looking forward to hosting the IGF conference, and we are sure that it will be approved. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
I'm Emmanuel Adjovi from International Organization of Francophonie, French-speaking communities. I would like to bring the support of my organization to Senegal candidacy. I have trust in the will of the board to take into account diversity and inclusion principle when the board will take his decision. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Marilyn, I think you're going to be last. And please go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Marilyn Cade. I'm going to speak briefly on three topics. The first one is speaking as the chair of the business constituency. It is my pleasure to announce that the business constituency heard from Debbie Hughes and a colleague of hers about a proposal that they have to launch a new constituency focused on NGOs, non-governmental organizations that are focused more on the organizational interest of those non-commercial parties. When we first founded ICANN, it was our dream that we would have such organizations actively engaged in ICANN. And so far, we haven't been fully successful. Some have tried to participate and not found it quite as rewarding or welcoming as needed. This new constituency offers the opportunity to diversify the constituency participation within the NCSS and the NCSG and to add balance to the non-contracted parties' house. I am a member, as the business constituency, of the CSG, the commercial part of that house, and we would greatly welcome the diversification of constituency within the other half of our sisterhood, so to speak. So I bring you that message from the business constituency. I heard Debbie speak to not just us, but others. I would and receive support as well. I now want to just make a comment about the importance of the inclusion of the governments in the work of ICANN. Going back historically, again, when we created ICANN, we understood the importance of governments being with us in participation and in advice and in the interactions. So when I hear people raising a question about the importance of governments, I remind them that we are all critical stakeholders and that I appreciate the work and the effort that the governments do in order to be here and to work with us. May I beg the indulgence to make a quick comment about WSIS and the IGF?
As you're not holding anyone else up? Yes.
In 2004 and 2005, I was part of a multi-stakeholder group here at ICANN who helped to organize briefing sessions for the full participation held at a time when all of the government attendees and the rest of us could participate in a public environment and talk about the importance and the emergence of this concept about internet governance. Coming out of the work of the WSIS, there was a call for the creation of the Internet Governance Forum. It has been established and been a successful opportunity to work together and examine critical and difficult issues that are parallel to some of the work that we do, but related to the work that we do. And many of you participate there. I am here to say that that is a very important forum for all of us, and that I urge that the board will continue the support not only of the senior staff and the board members, the regional liaisons and other staff, but that we will continue to actively participate in the global IGF and also in the regional and national IGFs. We're doing that today. I think we could do more and should do more. And I will say personally, when people say, I hope we'll be in Kenya, it is my intention to be in Kenya at the IGF.
Thank you, Marilyn. We're going to close the forum. I just had a...
Sorry, Peter.
Oh, Felice, sorry. Thank you.
Light is on. Edmond Chun, .Asia. Reflecting on the many discussions about cross-community, i.e. joint SOAC working groups, which are springing up in various forms on different topics this week, and remembering back at the Sydney or Seoul ICANN meetings which I first brought this issue up, I think it may have come the time for us to pick up this important subject, which is to explore putting together a framework for these type of joint working groups. I know every time a work group or process is being put together for the development of a process, it probably sounds more make work. Nevertheless, I will try to make a suggestion again for the board, or the community for that matter, to consider initiating work on a framework for the convening of cross-community, i.e. joint SOAC working groups. This would help reduce the duplicative and often time-consuming effort to create these cross-community working groups, which substance themselves have proven to be of great use, but process-wise, cumbersome and unnecessarily contentious. Thank you.
Thank you. Ram.
May I quickly add to what Edmund is saying? We have empirical evidence that this actually works. With what ESSAC has done along with CCNSO as well as with the GNSO, multiple topics, both on security and on IDNs. This is a really good approach and well worth replicating across the board.
Yes, I think we've seen other examples, the CCNSO with the GAC on IDN CCTLDs, perhaps most recently the REC6 working group in relation to the new GTLD program. So, right, any other comments from the board? If not, I'm going to close the public forum with the board's thanks for the comments that we've received today. What we do now is we're going to go and have a working dinner and try and prepare our positions for the board meeting tomorrow. Early in the morning, we'll be hearing reports from various SO and AC chairs. Then we go into the board meeting, and then we'll close.
And Peter, if we can give a hand to the entire community.
Yeah, thanks very much.